Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 4, text 14. Sutuvacha Dwapare Samanuprapte Tritaye Yuga Paryaye Jata Parasharat Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare Sutuvacha Dwapare Samanuprapte Tritaye Yuga Paryaye Jata Parasharad Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare Sutuvacha Dwapare Samanuprapte Tritaye Yuga Paryaye Jata Parasarad Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare Sutuvacha Dwapare Samanuprapte Tritaye Yuga Paryaye Jata Parasharad Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare 14.
It's Tritaye. You keep saying Trita.
Oh, okay. Dwapare Samanuprapte Tritiye Yoga Paryaye Jata Parasharad Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare Vacha Dwapare Samanuprapte Tritiye Yuga Paryaye Parasharad Yogi Vaishnavis. Sutra Vaishnav. Thank you. Sutta Sutta Goswami Uvacha said Dwapare in the second millennium Samanu Prapte on the advent of Tritiye third Yuga millennium Paryaye in the place of Jataha was begotten Parasharat by Parashara Yogi the great sage Pasavyam in the womb of the daughter of Vasu Kalaya in the plenary portion Hare of the personality of Godhead. A translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sutta Goswami said, when the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vyasadeva was born to Parashara in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu. Purport. There is a chronological order of the four millenniums, namely Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, and Kali. But sometimes there is overlapping. During the regime of Vaivaswata Manu, there was an overlapping of the 28th round of the four millenniums, and the third millennium appeared prior to the second. In that particular millennium, Lord Sri Krishna also descends, and because there was some particular alter, and because of this, did I get that right? Yeah, and because of this, there was some particular alteration. The mother of the great sage was Satyavati, the daughter of the Vasu, in parentheses, fisherman, and the father was the great sage Parashara Muni. That is the history of Vyasadeva's birth. Every millennium is divided into three periods, and each period is called a Shandya. Vyasadeva appeared in the third Shandya of that particular age. Omaginatimananda Shajananjana Sholakaya Chakshuddha Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamupakadam Ayam Dirati Swaparantikam. So I did some research to try to understand more about this, what Prabhupada refers to as overlapping of the millenniums. Because normally it's the cycle is Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, and Kali. And we came up with a few interesting things. First of all, Prabhupada uses the word overlapping, but... But he explains what he means by that. It's basically it was an interchanging. In other words, overlapping, like say the kirtan overlapped the class. If the kirtan overlaps the class, you don't have a class. You have just a long kirtan. Follow what I'm saying? But so if the second millennium, if the Dwarpa Yuga overlapped the Treta Yuga, then you wouldn't have a Treta Yuga. But that wasn't the case here. In other words, there was a Dwarpa Yuga and there was a Treta Yuga. They're both still happen, but they just change places. So when I was doing the research, Dravida suggested that perhaps the more accurate word would have been interchange as opposed to overlap. But anyway, Prabhupada makes it clear what happened. They switch places, you know, whether you like that word or not. The Treta came before the Dwarpa. So, and that's what happened. Now, was this just something like, a phenomenon of nature like an earthquake, a random event like an earthquake or a tsunami, or is it something like global warming, you know, that people are using too much, burning too much fossil fuel and it's destroyed the ozone layer and therefore we... Not exactly, no. The best we were able to come up with when we researched this, we found something on the ISKCON desire tree. And the reference was to a commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his commentary on this part of the Bhagavatam. And what he suggests, and Prabhupada hints at it here in his purport, he says here, Lord Sri Krishna also descends in this particular millennium. Oh, by the way, this overlapping, as Prabhupada refers to it, to the best of the research we did, it only happens during the Vaivaswata Manu. There's 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. Okay? The seventh Manu is Vaivaswata Manu. And in the life of each Manu, there's 71 cycles of the four yugas. Okay? So you got 14 manus, and the seventh manu in the 28th cycle, 28 out of 71 of the cycles of the yugas, there's this overlapping. And to the best of the research we did, that's the only time it happens. It only happens once in a day of Brahma. And it's interesting that it happens, just at the same time when Krishna is appearing. And it's not an accident. It's not an accident. And Prabhupada said, as I said, he hints at that in the purport. He says, Lord Sri Krishna also descends. In that particular millennium, Lord Sri Krishna also descends. And because of this, and there it is, and because of that, the descent of Lord Krishna, there is some particular alteration. And how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this is this, that, because normally it's Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, and Kali. Okay, and Lord Krishna appears at the end of the Dwarpa. Now, if in this particular cycle of the millenniums, if Lord Krishna would have appeared at the end of Dwarpa, and if Dwarpa would have came before Treta, 800,000 years, because that's how long the Treta Yuga is, 864,000 years. 864,000 years would have passed before the appearance of Vyasadeva, and then another 5,000 years before Lord Chaitanya. So that's a long time. That's a lot of time. So at Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and my researcher was Shyama Kunda on this, so if there's any problem, we've got to blame. What Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests was that the reason why for the overlapping of the millenniums is so the time was closer together. You see? In other words, rather than Krishna appearing 864,000 plus another 5,000 years before the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, he just appeared 5,000 years before the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. So everything was fresh. You know, it's fresh in the minds. And also, another reason is that when Krishna appears once in a day of Lord Brahma, it's a very special appearance. Now, this one, I don't think, I heard from another devotee who also claimed he read it on ISKCON Desire Tree. So unfortunately, my information is a little bit secondhand here, but ISKCON Desire Tree is a pretty reliable source. He was making the point that the Krishna that appears once in a day of Lord Brahma in the seventh manu, Vaivashvata manu, in the 28th round of the 71 millennium, you know, cycles like that, is Vrijendranandana Krishna. Is the original Krishna of Goloka Vrindavan, okay? And he comes to do more than just Parichanaya Sadhanam Vinishaya Chaduskritam Dharmasam Sapanataya Sambhavamiyag. He comes to do more than just deliver the pious, annihilate the miscreants, and reestablish principles of religion. He comes to actually display the Vrindavan pastimes and the different rasas and, you know, etc. And then, and there's a connection there, because Lord Chaitanya, he comes to do more than just reestablish the Yuga Dharma of the congregational chanting of the Holy Name. Now, this devotee, who I got this information from, I'm just going to present it because it sounds like I've kind of heard it before, but I apologize that I wasn't able to pin it down, you know, to like seeing it in print. But he said this, and it sounded right, and we could, at the end of the class, if somebody thinks differently or knows differently, I can add something to it, we can discuss it. That there's a Krishna that comes at the end of every Dwarpa Yuga, but he's Vasudev Krishna. He made that point. And he said that there's actually not Lord Chaitanya, but a Gaur Narayan that comes in the Kali Yuga. And he was claiming he'd also read that. He didn't just hear that and make that up out of the blue. But in any event, so the point is that this particular round of millennium, the 28th round of the millenniums, and the Vaivashvata Manu is special because it's for Vrijendranandana Krishna. It's not Vasudev Krishna. And he's followed 5,000 years later by Lord Chaitanya. And also, to add a little bit more to it, Vyasadev, who's actually Krishna. And actually, in a previous class I gave, maybe a year ago or something like that, I did some research on that. And that, generally speaking, Vyasadev is a post. Vyasadev can be an empowered jiva. But this particular Vyasadev, the Vyasadev in this 28th round of them, 71, is actually Vishnu Tattva. You know, he's an expansion of Lord Vishnu. So it's kind of like everything's getting lined up here for something special. You know, and that special thing is that Krishna's going to come and he's going to perform the Vrindavan pastimes. It's going to be recorded by Vyasadeva, who is not just an empowered jiva, but and actually an expansion of Lord Vishnu himself, you know, basically Krishna. And then Krishna is going to come again 5,000 years later, and as his own devotee, he's going to show everybody how to take advantage of that. You know, mercy of Krishna that happened 5,000 years ago, and enhance their devotional service like that. So it's very special, and so actually it's relevant to us because we are the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We are the this was all done for the purpose of helping conditioned souls become Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead and elevate themselves in devotional service. And that's what this, this movement is for that purpose. See, we're the continuation of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, of Vyasadeva's and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's program. And it's actually, that's stated as such in one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada refers to ISKCON as a branch of the Chaitanya tree. And he says the same activities are going on as went on then, and like that. So we are a branch of the Chaitanya tree. We are a continuation of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay? And following on from that, what we're doing when we come together here, is very important. It's actually very important. First, I'd like to make the point that the Hare Krishna movement is... And its most important aspect is the activities of the members. Okay? The Hare Krishna movement is the buildings. The Hare Krishna movement is whatever, But the most important aspect of the Hare Krishna movement, all right, is the members, their activities. You see? So when we come together, the devotees, the people who believe in this, and the devotees, and we perform these kirtans and come for class and chant our japa and the other things that we do, okay, that's the most important aspect of the Krishna conscious movement, and believe it or not, that's what's going to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. That's my understanding, and I'll explain that in a second. That the coming together of the members to perform sadhana bhakti in the association of each other according to the directions of the predecessor, our spiritual master and the predecessor acharya, that's what's actually the active ingredient. That's the thing. That's what's actually going to enable the Krishna consciousness movement to spread. Okay? Now, here's my evidence. I'm going to read a verse and a purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. From the chapter Sri Madhavendrapuri's Pure Devotional Service. Okay, so Prabhupada says here, now this is in relation to when Madhavendrapuri installed the Gopal Didi, and very quickly they were able to organize this festival. So quickly that it would seem like it was impossible to do it, and there's some supernatural factor involved. Krishna. So anyways, the translation goes, the wonderful festival installation of Sri Gopalji was arranged in one day. Certainly all this was accomplished by the potency of Gopal. No one but a devotee can understand this. So now here's Prabhupada's purport. He talks about this in a general way. He makes a general philosophical point. He says, the Krishna conscious movement has spread all over the world within a very short time, within 5 years. Okay? And mundane people are very much astonished at this. However, by the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we understand that everything is possible by the grace of Krishna. Why does Krishna have to take 5 years? In 5 days, he can spread his name and fame all over the world like wildfire. Those who have faith and devotion to Krishna can understand that these things happen so wonderfully by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are simply the instruments. In the fierce battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was victorious within 18 days simply because Krishna's grace was on his side. And it quotes that verse. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also be certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. That's Sanjaya speaking. Now here it comes. Prabhupada says, so he's making that point that you know, at least the battle of Kurukshetra. He's making an analogy. The battle of Kurukshetra was won by Arjuna, the Pandavas, even though they were smaller in one sense. You know, from a mundane estimation, they had a less powerful army. They were certainly smaller in number, and they're less powerful. But they had the grace of Krishna. Arjuna surrendered. Krishna used him as his instrument, and he became practically invincible for that reason. So Prabhupada's going to make an analogy here. He says, if the preachers in our Krishna conscious movement are sincere devotees of Krishna, Krishna will always be with them because he is very kind and favorable to all his devotees. Just as Arjuna and Krishna were victorious in the battle of Kurukshetra, this Krishna consciousness movement will surely emerge victorious if we but remain sincere devotees of the Lord and serve the Lord according to the advice of the predecessors. So, you know, Prabhupada's giving a formula here of how to be successful. And basically what he's saying, at least in this particular purport, the way to become successful is to remain sincere devotees of the Lord, serving the Lord according to the advice of the predecessor acharyas. And in parentheses it says, the six Goswamis and other devotees of the Lord. Then Papa goes on to say, as Narottam Das Thakura stated, Tandera Chardana Sevi Bhakti Sanivas, Janame Janame Hoy Eabilas. The Krishna consciousness devotees must always desire to remain in the society of devotees, Bhakti Sanivas. They cannot go outside the Krishna consciousness society or movement. So Papa is making that, that's a very important point. This is one of the rules of the formula here, one of the ingredients of the formula. Okay? So it says, within the society, he repeats it again, within the society, we must try to serve the predecessors by preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult and spreading his name and fame all over the world. If we attempt this seriously, here it is again, within the society, it will be successfully done. There's no question of estimating how this will happen in the mundane sense, but without a doubt it happens by the grace of Krishna. See, so in other words, it's like there's a way in which Prabhupada, the predecessor acharyas, Lord Chaitanya and Krishna want this whole thing to happen. They want, you know, Prabhupada said one of these things he quoted on is, you'll show your love for me by how much you cooperate to spread this movement after I'm gone. So it's like, you know, the Prabhupada and the predecessor acharyas, they want to see the devotees, the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, work cooperatively, you know, doing things we're doing, like showing up the morning program and doing nice kirtanin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all the things that we do. They want to see that we're doing that nicely, and then they're pleased, and because they're pleased, the movement becomes empowered. You see, just like Arjuna, he pleased Krishna, you know, he pleased Krishna, and then he was empowered, and then, zoom. Etc. So in the same way, if we just follow the instructions, you know, working cooperatively, following the instructions of the predecessor acharyas, then the movement will be empowered because, Prabhupada and all the predecessor acharyas will be pleased with that effort, and then things will happen. That's my understanding. In the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 5 in the purport, Prabhupada says, we may think of doing something, but it is not always possible and to do as we like. But then he goes on to say, but when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything happens so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. See? So that's the real determining factor. The real determining factor is Krishna. You know, when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, it happens so perfectly you can't even imagine how it's being done. So the main thing is to please the spiritual master. Pleasing the spiritual master, of course, just means you're pleasing Krishna. And then when that's done, everything happens. Simply by Krishna's willing, everything will happen so wonderfully we won't even be able to imagine how it's being done. And, there are other references to that. I mean, I hope I'm not sounding like a broken record because in other classes I've mentioned this, but there's that, there's a letter Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda regarding Krishna's being kind upon us. So, in that letter Prabhupada said, Krishna, Arjuna was Krishna's best friend. He could have easily just awarded the victory to Arjuna, but he didn't. He said, so Prabhupada goes, so ordinarily we must try our best to our best capacity to achieve something. And then by Krishna's grace, all of a sudden, we shall see. Everything will be there. That sort of help from Krishna is transcendental happiness. Why? Because you're experiencing Krishna's reciprocation. And that's how it works. It's not about numbers. It is about numbers in one sense, because, Prabhupada wanted us to double it. But the real thing is to execute these activities you know, in the mood of trying to please the spiritual master, the predecessor acharyas, Tandera Chadam Sevi, in the association of the devotees, Prabhupada said about three times in that paragraph I read, you can't do it outside the association of the devotees. You got to work cooperatively. You got to be wanting to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and you got to be doing that in the association of the devotees. That's what Prabhupada wanted. You know, he wanted the devotees to learn how to interact with each other, be very respectful, be very humble, and there's plenty of good reason to be like that. And then, you know, it's like a mother and a father when they see they have a big family, they have a lot of kids, and when they see the kids are kind of like, you know, doing what they were supposed to do, doing what they were told to do, and behaving nicely and cooperating with each other and not pulling each other's hair or, you know, upsetting each other, then the mother and father are happy, and then they, you know, they bless the children. It's kind of like that, you see? So that's my understanding of, you know, how it works. And that's, this purport, as I said, is significant because, you know, Krishna's gone to all the trouble to switch these millenniums around. He's, you know, we should cooperate. Krishna's switched these millenniums around, and then he arranged for Vyasadeva to... And he came and displayed his Vrindavan pastimes, and he brought Vyasadeva in there as an expansion of Vishnu himself, Vyasadeva, you know, not just a Shaktivesh avatar, although I doubt there would be much difference, but, well, anyway. But, and then, you know, Lord Chaitanya comes 5,000 years later, and so it's all been set up. You know, Krishna's done a lot of work here to try to, you know, help us. Elevate us to love of Godhead, so we should cooperate with the program and be nice boys and girls and follow the instructions of the spiritual master, working cooperatively with each other, and let's see what happens. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to, you know, it ain't over till it's over. I mean, I don't know about any of you out there. I used to be a sports fan, and I know from my experience as a sports fan, when I was watching a game, even if the team I was rooting for was way behind or something like that, I'd watch it till the buzzer, you know, because I saw a lot of games where, you know, right in the last few minutes, you know, one team came back, and whoo, so anything could happen. It's like when Archie would say, all bets are off when you're dealing with Krishna. Is that the right expression? All bets are off. You don't know what's going to happen. There could be a really glorious outcome. It's already glorious, so just what we're here and we're doing what we're doing. But, you know, it could get really good. I mean, something really amazing could happen. When Krishna wants to do something simply by his willing, everything happens so perfectly, you can't even imagine how it's being done. So stay tuned to this station. I think we should all just be thinking like that. Just like, let's continue being really enthusiastic and determined and just doing exactly what we're doing. And let's see what Krishna's got in store, you know? Now, on the point of, I mentioned how, you know, because it's emphasized in this purport that I read from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhakti Sannivas, you know, within the society of devotees, and how it's proper, it seems to be emphasized a lot of importance to, you know, the associating with the devotees. And there's plenty of good reason. I was thinking of this, well, I shouldn't have been thinking about it, but I was sharing my japa yesterday. It occurred to me that, yeah, it's a very important point. You know, devotees, it's kind of like, oh, here's how it came to me. Okay. I was chanting and it just came to me. You know, anybody can do these things. Any 5-year-old child or 7 or 8-year-old child can do all the stuff we're doing. They could chant Hare Krishna, and there's nothing hard about that. You know, there's nothing that is so difficult about what we're doing. But then the next thought that came to my mind was, yeah, anybody can do these things, but will anybody do these things? No. There's only very special people that are willing to do these things. And those devotees are special. Just like, you know, there's an expression, hand-picked cherries. I think that the people who get to come and participate in the Krishna conscious movement are like that. They're the hand-picked cherries. There's so many jivas out there. I mean, you know, just here on the face of the earth, what is it, 6 billion or 7 billion people? How many people are there that have been fortunate enough to be chosen to be allowed to participate in the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement? Not a lot. Not a lot. See, so in other words, when we're dealing with each other, we have to constantly be reminding ourselves and constantly be trying to kick out the bodily conceptions of life. You know, to not be thinking like, oh, there's that person. Well, they're kind of fat, or they're kind of skinny, or they're kind of smart, or they're kind of stupid, or they're kind of rich, or they're kind of poor, or they're kind of good looking, or they're kind of ugly, or whatever, you know. Just get that out of the head. There's somebody who's been chosen been by the, you know, Prabhupada, the predecessor charge, Lord Chaitanya, that this is a special soul, that they've been allowed to come here and participate in the activities of the Krishna conscious movement, right? Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan, am I right or what? Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prashade by Bhakti Lada Beej, that after wandering throughout the universe, that living entity, Kona Bhagyavan Jeev means that living entity who is fortunate. Only fortunate people, only fortunate souls get to come and participate. So, you know, so it's good to be remembering that I'm not, there's a tendency to just think, oh yeah, there's so and so, you know, no. Just always be reminding yourself, nope, this is a special soul. I got to be careful. I want to be really careful to be very respectful, very friendly, very polite, very cooperative, very helpful with all the devotees. Not, you know, not just to the ones who could kick me out of here if I don't do the right thing, but to everybody, you know, to all the devotees, because they're all special, special souls. And it's, you know, the more we can, and you know, I'm not saying this in a mood of like, you know, you're not doing this. You should, no, I think this community is a very good example of what I'm talking about. I'm actually so happy to be here as a member of this community because I feel that. I feel that there are like innumerable good examples of devotees who are doing that already. You know, going from the top down, and we're very fortunate, very very fortunate to be in that situation. You know, to have these association of devotees who know how to treat other devotees, who know how to relate to other devotees. It's a blessing. It's a great blessing to be in the association of people who are in that category. And I feel we have a lot of people in that category already here. But so that's what we want to do. We want to be careful to keep that in mind that. You know, the people that we're dealing with are actually very special souls. And Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, Udada Sarva Avaiti Gyani Tvatmaiva Mematam. He says, there's that verse where he talks about the four kinds of people that come to me. And then there's the distressed, the ones who want money, the ones who are inquisitive, and then those who are seeking knowledge of the absolute truth. So he says that, you know, of all these devotees, the one who's in knowledge of me is the best, you know. But then he does make the point. He says, Udarta Sarva Avaiti, Jani Tvatmaiva Mematam, that all these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. So, hey, if that's how Krishna sees it, you know, you want to see it some other way? Krishna sees it. All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. So, in other words, it's not like only the pure devotees are magnanimous souls. Yeah, they're very magnanimous souls. But even the regular old, you know, people who are coming because if they want some relief from distress or they want some improvement in their material situation or whatever, Krishna sees them as magnanimous souls. They're going to get purified. It's just a matter of time. But, you know, so anyway, it's a good thing to keep in mind. So, yeah, so this is actually, you know, a preaching verse. You know, you can relate this to the whole, this verse relates in that sense to the Krishna conscious movement. Now, I've got a couple minutes left. Actually, I don't even have a couple minutes left, do I really? Well, because I just wanted to say this, it's talking about how Vyasadeva was the son and of Parashara Muni and Satyavati. And Satyavati, actually, I'll just try to say a little something about her real quick. Interesting personality. She wasn't just a fisherman's daughter. If you got to see, the thing is, now Prabhupada has the very difficult job in these books and in his purports to give a lot of information, but he's only got a certain amount of, you know, time and space to do it. So it does mention here that she was the daughter of Vasu. And it also says, you know, she was the daughter of a fisherman. But you know, here's the story, okay, of Satyavati. There was a Vasu. A Vasu, by the way, is an Upadeva, like a Sajja, a Marut, an Aditya. You know, there's different. Upadevas means sub demigods. So the Vasus are sub Bhishma was a Vasu, okay. So this particular. There was a Vasu who happened to be, he was an emperor, and he was he became an emperor because he was a very devout devotee, if you could say a devotee, of Indra. He worshipped Indra, and he got a benediction from Indra. He was actually directed by Indra he became the emperor of, he became the king of Chedi, and then he became emperor, and he had sons who he went out and deputed to rule different parts of the, anyway, so he was, he started performing these very severe austerities, and Indra became worried, as Prabhupada in different classes he would give. He becomes worried that somebody's trying to get his position. So Indra became worried, and he decided, well, you know what, I'm going to advise him to stop these austerities and have children and, you know, get him to chill out a little bit. So he advised him to do that, and he was submissive. He took that advice, and anyway, you know, it's too long a story. If anybody wants to hear this story, I'm going to tell. They can come and ask me, and I'll tell them after the class, because I don't really want to go way over time. So I'll stop there, and I'll ask if there are any questions about the main, you know, what I was talking about. Anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah.
January 2018 come. Can I realize, like, understand it like this?
It's an interchange. Okay, that's the best I could explain to you. Usually it's Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, Kali. In this particular cycle of the millenniums, there's 71 cycles in the life of one Manu, and there's 14 Manus in the day of Lord Brahma. Okay, so in the life of the seventh Manu, Vaivaswata Manu, in the 28th cycle, for some reason, and I tried to explain a bit in the class what that reason was, the Dwarpa Yuga, the Treta Yuga, came before the Dwarpa Yuga. Bloop. Okay? They interchanged. Prabhupada used the word overlapping, interchanging, but he explained it as that he described. From the description, we can understand what happened. The Treta Yuga came before the Dwarpa Yuga. And to the best of my research, and the information I had available, it only happens that one time, the 28th round of millenniums of the, you know, the 7th Manu and the day of Lord Brahma. It's not like an earthquake that just, you know, could happen any second or you know, something like that. It's a planned thing, and to the best of my information, it only happens at that one time. Does that explain it?
So that's just like, instead of 2018 will come, and 2019 is coming.
If 2019 happened before 2018?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that, right?
And it also, not only that, it happens for a reason. And the reason was to facilitate the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement, to facilitate the deliverance of the conditioned souls, given, you know, that yeah, Archita wants to say something to help us out here. There's some spiritual purpose behind it, is what I was suggesting, and that was the main thing of the class. Yep.
It's more like seasons. Kali Yuga is like the winter, dark and cold, and so normally winter is followed by spring, which would be Satya Yuga, and then summer, Treta. But in this case, summer and winter switch around. You see, imagine if you have spring, and then all of a sudden there is. You see, it's like seasons.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Four seasons.
Because years are the same.
The seasons got switched. Forget about years. It's just like every year we have four seasons. But if in one year summer came before spring, you'd be like, whoa, what's going on here? So in this one instance, Vaivaswata Manu's reign, in that time, those two seasons or those two ages switch. As he explained nicely, that's Krishna's desire so that there's not a long gap between his appearance and Lord Chaitanya's appearance.
Thank you for that clarification. One. Do we have another question or not? Yeah, Amala Bhakti Maharaj, and then Prabhu.
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhupada.
Thank you.
I just have one question. This analogy that Archita gave is very simple and easy to understand, where one season comes before another out of season. But what do we mean when we say that, okay, Treta Yuga is normally the third of the four ages? So now it's the second of the four ages. But we're using words, Treta, Dwapara. What do we mean in terms of manifestation?
Good point.
What is the difference in manifestation? I mean, I have some speculation on this. Maybe it isn't a speculation. Basically, the idea in Treta Yuga, there's a... first of all, when you have Satya Yuga, you have a very... like the Golden Age, very pure. Then the next, which would normally be Dwapara Yuga, which would be the Silver Age, in which people have some deterioration in character of persons would have taken place, and then we would have the next would be Treta Yuga. There'd be further deterioration of character, and then Kali Yuga, you have terrible until actually persons begin eating each other as food. So in terms of Treta Yuga, now coming second, do we mean that does it mean that the character of Dwapara Yuga people are now manifest in Treta Yuga? Or does it mean the character of the Treta Yuga people, which would be some degree of deterioration, is still manifesting in as the second when it would be the third?
Okay, now I understand exactly what you're asking, okay? And I don't know the answer, but I can say this, that in the research I did, it did make the point that, as you nicely really said, it's these names are in relation to the religious principles. Now, Dwapa, Dwo, means two. So, in other words, the Dwapara Yuga means half the religious principles are gone. You know, there's the four pillars of religiosity. So in the Dwapara Yuga, it's only half, two out of four. There's four legs, like the four legs of that bull, Dharma, the bull. So two of them are gone and two are remaining. And then the Treta Yuga, there's three gone and one remaining. And then in the Kali Yuga, it starts off with one and then it disappears, truthfulness. So it's in relation to that. Now, if you asked a very good question, was it so in this particular cycle of the millenniums, did the qualities of the Dwarpa, the people that normally have in the Dwarpa Yuga, was that experienced I don't know. I'd have to find the statement, but I know things were pretty good when Krishna was around, and I don't know if that was because it was like a Dwarpa Yuga, even though it was interchange like that, or do you know? I mean, do you know the answer to your own question there?
Not really. That's why I asked it.
Yeah, it's a good question. Anybody know the answer to that question?
I mean, I was trying to understand. I mean, we talk, these are words, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga.
Yeah, you got it right. It's the characteristics. It's the religious principles.
What does it mean in a manifest form? In other words, how do we differentiate what is happening now in Treta, which would normally happen later on?
Yeah. More and less religiosity. More and less religiosity. Just like,
are the characteristics of people also from Dwapara Yuga
different?
Would normally be the second transfer to the people in Treta Yuga so that they're actually manifesting Dwapara Yuga characteristics being the second of the four.
Yeah.
And are the Dwapara manifesting the characteristics of the Treta? That's my question. It would seem to be logical, but logical is not always correct.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the question, but I think it's in terms of religious principles, just like Archita made the point, weather, The spring is the best weather, and then the summer is the next, and then the falling. So it's better weather. When you're in the Satya Yuga, you got better weather, and the weather deteriorates as you move towards the Kali Yuga. So in the sense that, in the Satya Yuga is very religious. Everybody's, I heard Papa say more than one occasion, everybody's Paramahamsa, and then it just, goes downhill from there. You see, but whether in this particular round, the millenniums, the qualities were changed as well, just to accommodate the Krishna's pastimes, I don't know. I would think I don't know.
This explanation is a very simple one, easy to understand, because we're talking about winter cold, winter summer hot, winter spring medium, fall in between medium. Those are concrete examples which we can all identify and know. But now what I was trying to bring out is when we talk about, well, I've already said it, so I don't need to say it.
Yeah, no, it's religious principles. So, like, what are the four religious principles? Truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness, and mercy, right? So, in the Satya Yuga, they're all present. In the Dwapara Yuga, three are present, or two are present. In the Treta Yuga, like that. It just deteriorates as time goes on. It's in relation to religious principles.
To me, it would have to be the difference in the character of the people, the degree of deterioration that would, to me, be the manifestation or the difference when something's exchanged from, as Archie was mentioning, instead of getting summer, you're getting winter. So instead of getting a certain amount of deterioration, you're getting either less or you're getting more, depending upon which.
Agreed. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Namo Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah, sure.